LAYY, a feast for the ears, featuring two cultural giants from Senegal, Julien Juga and his famous chorale, and master drummer Dudu Ndiaye Rose and his group of traditional drummers. It's one of my favorite pieces to hear. You just feel like you can just, you know, calm down, and all is well with the world when you've listened to this wonderful combination of voice and drums. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and my gosh, what the heck is going on here in this country? What is going on? You tell me. Well, President Barack Obama made a rare appearance on Capitol Hill yesterday. And it had to do with a partisan mission at a Democrats-only two-hour closed-door meeting. He urged the party faithful to protect Obamacare, the health care coverage program he launched in 2010. Also on Capitol Hill yesterday, Vice President-elect Mike Pence assured Republicans that dismantling Obamacare is a top priority for the incoming Trump administration, and it was their job, their duty, to support that effort. In Obama's waning days in office, I think he has only, 16 more days or so, hot-button issues like Obamacare are again reviving hard-edged political and ideological differences between Republicans and Democrats. We also must recognize that in some cases there are no differences at all. But as it relates to specific issues, we see a revival of the differences in order for each of the parties, that is, to demonstrate again where they stand. And it's very, very important to them to make sure that the public is again reminded of where they stand on these important issues, Obamacare being the issue in question. Trump used these differences, and so did Hillary Clinton, when you think about it, including the problem-plagued Obamacare program, to sink Hillary Clinton. And he will continue to mine these differences to support his presidential agenda and to keep the faith with his political base. The Democrats, having suffered stunning losses in the 2016 presidential election, are determined to regain ground by just about any means necessary. It's already a brutal fight, and it will get worse. The new order has reverted to its old ways, practicing the politics of vengeance, not only against each other, but inevitably against the people as well. And of course, this brings us to the recurring question here: what is our plan? It's going to get really nasty, because it has to. It has to get nasty. Both parties are suffering terribly in terms of, well, of course, Trump won. So you could, people may make the case that, well, the Republicans are, you know, they have a decisive edge here. They have not only the White House, they have the U.S. Senate, they have the House of Representatives, they have several governorships across the United States. So they control many state legislatures as well. But there still is a huge chunk of the country that isn't too happy about the Republicans. So the task here is to affirm the fact that the Republicans are in charge. They have a very, very dedicated support system among voters who are very right of center, and they have to, because this victory by Trump gives them a leg up in reclaiming their losses, reclaiming and recuperating from their political losses. And you can see strains already of the vengeance, a kind of vengeful attitude that, okay, now we're in charge. And now that we are in charge, we're going to go gangbusters about everything we didn't like. And we want it done quick, real soon, right now. It is a very troubling attitude, because it already is reflecting itself in the way people in Congress are behaving. It's getting very nasty. It's getting to the point of name calling. You know, not that we haven't seen these things before, but what I'm pointing to here is not only that this is their mood and their behavior, but with this mood and behavior, we can expect a kind of vengeful attitude toward the masses of people. It is just so natural. The spillover effect, and we will get it from both sides. This couldn't happen again at the worst time, because, as we've been discussing, we really don't have a vehicle of our own that could help, you know, just stave off the attack on the people. We are wide open to attack. You know, the old African proverb that when the elephants fight, it's the grass that loses. For the sake of making points, you know, they're going to just, you know, they remove the scabbard, the swords from the scabbard, and they're ready to fight. Knowing that even if things get out of hand, it could be excused. It would be excused as, well, you know, we're just doing our job, representing the people and doing their bidding. In fact, that has been the explanation, the going explanation for the what looks like reckless behavior on the part of both parties, that we are following the dictates of the people and acting in their behalf and in their interests. So even if it gets rough, understand that, you know, A, in the grand tradition of American democracy, and B, we are doing this actually to set the country back on its course. And in the case of Trump, to make America great again. So we should live with this vengeance, and the vengeance will further express itself with dead aim by both Republicans and Democrats, dead aim against the programs that each party found very useful to keep on track. Obamacare is the number one such program. To be fair, he left himself open for this because even in its early stages, there was a great deal, even within the Democratic Party, a great deal of dissonance and objection about it. It was riddled, most people said at the beginning, it was riddled with flaws that inevitably would actually cost people much more than the program was held out to be. And it seems to have gone that route. The president, on the other hand, says that the health care coverage program has provided some means of healthcare coverage for as many as 20 million people who, without the subsidized program, would not have had any coverage at all. And yet we still have millions of Americans who, for whatever reason, mostly because they do not meet the guidelines for eligibility for coverage, who have just been left out of the program and cannot qualify for the program. So the program has been flawed, no question about that. And the program not only has been flawed in terms of its administration, but it has been flawed from the very beginning because it really wasn't, it did not originate in the legislative houses. It did not originate really in Congress at all. This was a program essentially written, again, here comes Hillary to the rescue. This program was the byproduct of the insurance industry with the help, a great deal of help, from the Clintons. This was to be, if it weren't for the fact that Obama actually won the election against Hillary, she would have claimed credit for creating this program, because you may recall this program, Hillary Clinton, in the early days of it, in the planning stages of it, corralled the insurance industry, big shots, the healthcare industry, big shots, corralled them behind closed doors, concocted something that eventually became the Affordable Care Act. But it really was a reflection of the interests of the healthcare and insurance industries. It did not start off as a patient-centered program. And this was the most glaring flaw about Obamacare. Obama himself decided to seize upon this program because it would have resonated broadly throughout the United States, and he could get a great deal of political leverage out of taking the program and putting it through Congress. Congress didn't get to vote on this program. It didn't get very much scrutiny. It didn't go through the normal process at all. So this was, in large measure, a self-inflicted wound. And it now presents in the 2016 presidential election, it presented a perfect opportunity for Hillary Clinton's opponent, Donald Trump, to cite the program as a perfect example of governmental waste and the compromises that the Democrats have been making at the expense of people, and, you know, the whole thing, the whole barrage. He made great use of it, pointing to the incompetence of the Democratic Party and its leadership in ramming through a program so riddled with flaws. And now that he is to be president, he has no incentive at all. He has everything to gain from holding on to it and making it a signature victory for him in his brand new administration. Well, you expect the parties to go at each other, as they historically have been, and gaining ground by exploiting the weak spots of the adversaries. But this is not a normal transition. And the conduct both of the presidential campaign and now on the advent of actually occupying the White House and the Congress by Republicans, they have been chomping at the bit for the opportunity to really, really bruise the Democrats. The conduct right now of both Democrats and Republicans is quite alarming. And while one expects to have or to see, you know, a brisk exchange, this is a brisk exchange, they're acting very, very aggressively and with no attention or no regard, actually, for the fallout. They're settling scores, political scores with each other. And so the expected fallout will be that the prized programs of each party will now be up for attack. This means that the fallout must be expected, and it will center on the people, not the parties, it's the people. They're going to, are really going to suffer. It's deplorable. And it's going to get worse because Trump will now have every reason as the new man in the White House. He will have every reason to prove himself, quote unquote, mostly to his right-leaning supporters, and also to disprove the popular view that he doesn't quite know what he's doing. He is braggadocious, he is brazen, he is bold and whatnot, and in some cases they have tried to convert these qualities into desirable qualities of a new president. But just the same, people are watching this president and the reaction to him and are very concerned because he really doesn't seem, he really hasn't given the impression of thoughtful action. And this is very disconcerting. All of that stuff comes with politics. I am saying, though, that I'm concerned about the fallout and who will bear the brunt. Who is going to pay for this, tit-for-tat warfare between Democrats and Republicans, who both have reason to be aggressive and to be extreme in their actions, if only to prove their points that they are capable of governing and should actually hold on to power. And we should therefore, just live with what they're going to be doing. We, however, have no defense mechanism, no effective line of defense. We can't influence the behavior of the Democratic Party or the Republican Party at this point. And we have no independent party that could deliver for us some kind of defense based on the interests that are known. Some of them had been touted during the election by people like Bernie Sanders and the Green Party, for example. But when we see things crank up, and they already are cranking up, with an eye toward budget cuts, major budget cuts, programs that will be totally eliminated, that are desperately needed, if only to make the point that we're back to the old pull yourself up by your own bootstraps days. And the more resolute that you are about that, the more desirable you are in the eyes of your constituencies. So this is how it's going. We have no way right now, no effective defense. And certainly if we do have a defense, we are the ones who will have to create it from scratch. This is what I've been trying to communicate, that this, to me, is the greatest problem at the moment. That whatever is going to happen in Washington, that brawl that we're going to expect coming, and these folks proving to each other just how bold they are by taking unreasonable and irresponsible action, and being shored up in this undertaking by some bizarre idea that the philosophy that they're following is responsibility. People must have greater responsibility. That's going to be the going philosophy. And with that will come the actions that will shore up that particular position. They'll say, look, there's only so much that government should do. There's only so much that government can do. And the role of government is not to take care of people. The role of government is to create environments in which people can go about the task of taking care of themselves. Pull yourself up by your own bootstraps. That means it's a war on the poor. And now increasingly the working class and the middle class. But all these forms of war will be informed by this way of thinking, and they expect little or no real reaction. Sure, people will be out in the street. There'll be protests. But part of the plan here, too, is they have militarized the police, so whatever protests are out there can be contained and quashed. I'm misreading this whole thing. You'll tell me. But as I see it, we have no defenses to speak of. And if we do have defenses, if we do find a way to create defenses, that's exactly how they're going to come into existence. We have to create them. And that is a process of starting from square one all over again. The building blocks that the Trump administration is putting in place are the kinds of building blocks that are intended to last a long time. So look at the prospect here. We are going to find many of our programs obliterated. The Democrats are totally, they're blindsided, at least this is their view. We've been blindsided. They fully expected Hillary Clinton to win, but they are in a state of disarray. They need these acts by Trump. They need them. So they have no incentive to be ahead of them, ahead of these policies that are coming down the pike. They want them to happen so that they can then mount a counteroffensive. They don't want to do it up front. See, Obamacare basically is being touted by the Democratic Party. They now have a defense because they could say now that they're reacting to an attack on Obamacare, when in fact they left themselves open to attack on Obamacare, that includes the president, by creating a program just riddled with holes. And absolutely, from the very beginning, a mandate given not by the people, but by the insurance industry and the healthcare industry for profits. It is not a patient-centered, it's not a care-centered program. But they can't come out ahead of it. They have to allow Trump to attack them. And then they will counterattack. But in the meantime, both Trump and the Democratic Party will have to, while they fight each other over the program in any event would be in limbo, because the Democrats don't have the muscle in Congress at the moment. They don't have it to be certain of a victory. They don't have the votes. They're not in control of the House. They're not in control of the Senate. They're not in control of the White House. Obama is going to be gone on January the 20th. And they knew that this program was riddled with problems, and there are questions as to whether it's even constitutional. But they did nothing about it. They did nothing to really fix the problem ahead of time, because it was the problem. It was the program of Hillary Clinton. And it was adopted. The mandate then fell to Barack Obama to try and somehow shield her from blame, or shield the Democratic Party from blame, by pretending that the program is fantastic. And so they did not. They absolutely refused to be responsible in their legislation of this program. They were, in fact, downright corrupt by shielding this program from intense scrutiny. So you see how it works. In the meantime, even as a problem-riddled program, people needed it. So they were able to justify their reactions and their actions about the Obamacare program. Because look, people are using it. They're enrolling. They're getting health care. When they knew full well that structurally this program was going to implode inevitably, the people will become very disenchanted with it because the premiums are going up and up and up and up. The middle class in particular will find that their incomes are being eaten into because of the constant costs, cost increases, cost overruns. And even some Democrats were upset about this program, but they were quashed. So here we have even more incentive for Trump to be brutal and the Republicans to be brutal, because now they have an opportunity to really get rid of this and score points. They have a lot on their plate to do to restore the Republican Party itself as a people-friendly party. They had lost so much ground. They have to make up for that. And a program, defeating a program like Obamacare, would be a prize, a great prize. So they're going after it. But all of this is happening at a different level. We, on the other hand, are the grass. You know, the two elephants are fighting. We are the grass, and we are the people going to be trampled. This is just an example of what will happen. So, do you have any idea? Because I don't. Do you happen to see the possibility of some kind of defense actually forming itself and protecting the rights of the people, protecting the interests of the people, and responding specifically on the basis not of, you know, the political interests, but in terms of the human needs, which is what government is supposed to do, to take care of human needs. The parties are fighting for their survival. It has nothing or very little to do with the people's needs. It's a political war. We will simply have to figure a way to kind of get out of it, to survive it. But we can't do it. Here's our dilemma. We can't do this on our own. And those systems that traditionally would champion these rights and issues themselves they're damaged, or they have been co-opted, or they just are depleted of resources, or they have other interests. They're not interested in a fight. So that's the way I read it. Tell me how you read it. What do you think? We'll take this break and come back to your thoughts at 888-874-4888. We're talking about political vengeance. That's where we are right now, the new order and the politics of vengeance, right after this. You're listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM, 888-874-4888. We're talking about where we are right now in the scheme of things. as the Democratic Party and the Republican Party brace for perhaps epic warfare, the bottom line of which is that it will impact the people. But they're not too concerned about that right now. They're concerned about settling scores. And the outgrowth of that is absolutely going to mean a great deal of suffering for the majority of people. We don't seem to have effective defense systems at work right now, working in our interests. But that's just me and my read of it. I don't know what you are thinking, but you'll tell me now. You'll share your ideas at 888-874-4888. Byron from Queens, what are you thinking?
Yes, hi. How are you doing, Eutrice?
Fine, thank you. How are you?
I'm okay. I don't know if I can address your questions about what we need to do. I will say this, Eutrice. I'm very, very concerned because along with the not having any organization for us to rally around and protect ourselves, I'm also seeing that we're not getting accurate information as usual from the major news media. I was concerned. I was one of those people who called up your show a few weeks before the election, maybe a month or so before the election, and I told you why, even though I was against Hillary Clinton, why I was voted for her. And because I play chess, I could kind of see that we didn't have anything in place to protect ourselves should Hillary lose. I didn't suspect that we would lose the House and the Senate and the White House, but we lost all three. So now we're left out here with no clothes on. You know, we're basically, you know, defenseless. So, you know, like a lot of people, like, for instance, they keep asking, why does Trump question the intelligence community? Why is he going against the intelligence community? What is this bromance that he's having with Putin? And I mean, back in the summer, there were document things that came on TV and over the internet about how Putin is a white supremacist, and Trump and his family were white supremacists, and basically, you know, there's a realignment going on. I think actually you did a show back in February talking about, you know, whites in this country and around the world feel like they're losing power, and this is what they have to do. They have to regain power and reorganize and change the system completely around. I think that Trump is going to try to do that. I think he's going to try to take over the intelligence community. It's obvious by the generals that he's putting in place and Wall Street people that he's putting in place. He cares nothing about the working people, even many of the people that actually voted for him. And whenever white America catches a cold, black America and minorities
is dying of pneumonia, right?
We catch pneumonia, right? So it's going to be really, really bad. And I don't know. Rachel Maddow had a thing last night where, just like they organized around Obama after he got in office, they had this thing called I forget the name of it. She did it on her show last night, but it's on the internet where the people are beginning to organize already locally, going to their congresspeople locally, and maybe that's what we have to do with whatever you know organizing we do amongst ourselves. We have to join in with these other forces. I for one am in no shape to get out in the cold weather and have water sprayed on me and maize and dog holes. You know, I'm going to try to organize as best I can, but I don't know what to do. I don't know the answer, Eutrice. I don't know if you want to respond to any of that.
This is where we are, and, you know, there's nothing to apologize for. This is the dilemma we have to wrestle with, and we have to find a solution. And this is why I had begun this train of thought, saying that we have to really assess our position, and we are extremely vulnerable right now for all kinds of reasons, but most importantly, it's the consequence, whether of inaction or whether because we were betrayed by those systems that we invested in, whatever it is, the fact is here we are. And we are open to fierce attack, and it's coming. That's the thing. It is certain. We're not conjecturing here. I think we could be safe in saying that it's going to be brutal. And we have no organized system. And if ever we do find one in time to serve us, it would be because we have had to go back to square one again, start from scratch. And, you know, it's a time-consuming process.
But many, 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 many people, Eutrice, are going to be hurt. I'm using that word lightly. There's stronger words I could use, but many people are going to be very, very hurt. And this is the only reason why I was never really a Hillary fan, but I knew that I wasn't prepared, and many of us weren't organized and prepared to fight this onslaught that's going to be coming about in the next couple of years. I don't even know if we're going to make it to 4 years. I really mean that, Cecilia. I don't know if this country, this society, this system that we're now in, we're going to survive for 4 years until Trump would be voted out or whatever. I don't know. I don't see it. We'll see.
But it is important for us not to ignore it. It is important for us to be conscious of the reality that we're living in. You know, this is important. Thanks so much for getting us started today, Byron.
God bless you, Eutrice.
Thank you. Lincoln from Mount Vernon, you're on the air.
Hey, how are you, Eutrice?
I'm hanging in. How about you?
Good. Persevering is a better word.
Thank you. So what are your thoughts?
You know, I was noticing yesterday, I listened to you, and we think so much alike. Ever since I encountered you at WBI, especially I had coined that phrase a couple of days ago as I looked at the scene. I was referring to these people as fake politicians, and I was really happy to hear you saying the same thing yesterday. Anyway, as someone from the Caribbean, you're going to be acquainted with this, what I'm going to say. And this is it. Story is coming to bump. Hello?
The what? I'm sorry. You sound
the
like you're on speakerphone.
Coming to bump.
Are you on speaking directly into the phone?
I hope so. Yeah, I think this is
okay. Okay, it sounded a little distant, but go ahead.
And I think what we're seeing is a result of centuries and years of miseducation, and also in this story, the people are greatly at fault. We are seeing a situation where, you know, politics, especially as it is practiced in America, was never really about the people. It was always about the people in charge making decisions that had nothing to do with the people. It was always self-centered. If you look at Obama, like, for example, with the situation concerning Russia, Obama, knowing that this is an absolute lie, would go around himself accusing Russia of hacking the DNC, knowing that it's a lie. And this was all for his own selfish gain. The people themselves are a cause of this because they never saw politics the way it should be seen, meaning that politicians should serve as servants of the people and not as celebrities and personalities. And so everything, as we see Trump and the Hillarys, all of their actions is knee-jerk reactions to protect their own territories and their own self-centered interests, which have nothing to do with the people. I once heard a man say something. He's a man who voted for Obama. I can't remember his name. He's in politics, though. And the first term he voted for Obama, then after really looking at Obama, he came to this conclusion. He said, Obama does not have any convictions. He says, Obama just loves being president. And Obama, just like many others, are really pimps, and they are good at manipulating the people with their with their vacuous speeches. If you listen to Obama keenly and the rest, nothing they say is concrete. Like when Obama came about, when he
but
said,
you know, but here I just want to get us back on track. What you're saying is true, and I agree with you. However, we're looking for some kind of an idea of what could possibly form a type of protection, some kind of protection, some way of a strong response, or some way of acquiring a shield of some sort. How do we do that? Noting everything that you've just said, noting recent developments, where we seem not to be able to protect ourselves against an onslaught that is coming. What do you see as some kind of a workable idea or response?
That's why I said to you, that's why I started by saying story is coming to bump. The only resort would be to re-educate the people. It would be, and when I say re-educate the people, I'm talking about the police and the soldiers. And because, you see, one of the, we are a victim of miseducation, every last one of us, the people. We have lost sight that everyone in society is indeed a laborer.
But
and
in Lincoln,
even this
here's the issue.
Them,
the issue is we are practically out of time. We don't have.
But that's what I'm saying.
We need something that is going to be of immediate help. And what do you think that could be? The process of education is a long-term project. We want. This is going to be happening starting January the 20th. Let's deal with the reality of the time limitations here. And as of January the 20th, in fact, it has happened already. It's begun. So there is going to be a need to have something in place to give us some measure of protection. What could that possibly be?
The only thing we can do is think of self on some level. And what I'm trying to say to you is like a disease, and there's a process to cure this disease. And this disease is so far gone in America that there is no overnight fix. Because, first of all, the police and the soldiers, they will do what they're told to do. And so
basically, are you saying then, I hate to cut you off because there's so many people in queue, but are you saying then that we should brace ourselves for an intense period of suffering in which we will have no defenses, but we should start something anyhow? It may not benefit us immediately, but it would benefit somebody else. But are you saying that it is unrealistic to think that we could fashion a response in time to be of help to us in the current administration, or the soon-to-be current administration?
Yes, because what we need to do, the people are not ready for that. There's a very important word. You know, Jesus said it. He says, the light came in the world, but the world loved their darkness. And the people, as they are right now, they love their darkness. I listen to people, you know, who defend Obama, and if look at this, everyone.
But
you see,
we have to run. We have to run because there are so many people online. Maybe we'll continue this tomorrow, but I do want to get some more people online. I thank you for your contribution and getting us a little further down the road on this topic. Thanks so much for your call today, Sean from Westchester. You're on the air. Sean, are you there? Okay, then we go to Henry from Chicago. Okay. Or then we go to Chris from New York. Hello, Chris, you're on the air. Oh, everybody is gone. I got a note from the engineer, our very, very intrepid engineer, saying that there was a problem and all of the phone lines were dropped. So we will continue. Well, look, here's the thing. This might have happened for a reason, but it is so frustrating to see that it also was avoidable. We should not have been, and we should not be, in a position where we seem to have few, if any, defenses, political defenses. I mean, it's not that we haven't done the work. You know, African Americans, Latinos, Asians, everybody participated in one way or the other, in voting or being aware of options and exercising options and how they chose or still do choose to participate in the political sphere. The idea being that they have particular interests, unique interests, and they understand the value that we must have some means of protection. Oh, everybody's back. So then we go with Henry. Henry from Chicago, hey. You're on the air.
Hi, Trace. How's it going?
Okay. And you?
All right. I'm doing good. You kind of hinted on what I was thinking because, you know, I think it's, you know, to get the immediate protection from what's coming, it's probably a little too late for that. However, we still have time to build something at least for our children and for the future. Now, the one thing that I would say that we can probably start doing, more coalition building with other organizations, and not just in your area, but also around the nation and internationally. One of the things that I plan on doing in 2017 is going to different countries, at least go to like two or three different countries, and try to reach out to especially, you know, the people of color to see, you know, how we can link up. Because, you know, we're in the information age of technology now where we can actually communicate with people around the world. So I feel if we can coalition build internationally at least, you know, as well as, you know, within our own borders, you know, that could be a start of, you know, of some sort of protection against this, against what's, you know, coming with the Trump administration.
But in a way, I mean, that's a good idea. But in a way, doesn't that also put you in an awful position of having, in effect, to abandon your rights for proper representation from the political party that you support?
Well,
we have to settle for the fact that basically they didn't do the job. And it's not just about them not doing the job. It's that the system, again, we talk about systems, they are doing the job as per the system that they are part of.
I agree.
That system is more important than any other system from constituents wanting representation. Their system is more important to preserve, and therefore they pay attention to that. Our system, well, we can't do any damage to them. We can't do very much to them because that too is part of the system. They have protections against us. We don't have any protections against their actions at all.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Okay. Well, we have room for at least one more. By the way, if you don't get in, I see so many people online. If you don't get in, we're coming back to tomorrow, which is Free Your Mind Friday. Chris, you're on the air.
How are you doing, Trace?
Fine, thank you. How are you?
I'm good. Happy New Year.
Thank you. Same to you.
To you. And hello to all the PLN listeners and staff.
Thank you. So what are your thoughts on this matter of protection? We know it's coming. We know the hit is going to be pretty hard. Do you think that we are protected right now? Or we have some means of protection, some way of responding that is meaningful?
As of right now, we have zero protection. We have the potential to protect ourselves, but I think in a practical way, I look towards my own community here in Lawrence. The Jewish community has their own ambulance corps. They have their own quasi-police force. They control the schools. Even when they're getting government funding, they decide what's taught in the schools. The local shops and stores they own. And I think their protection from someone like a Donald Trump, let's say if he were to, turn on his heel, but their protection is that their income is not based on his decisions. Their own dollars circulate. He can't starve them into submission like he can the general population.
And well, that is partly true, but there's also very, very much the history that they benefit greatly, perhaps inordinately, from federal funds.
Yes, yes.
And that's been the history. And I know that from Crown Heights and in Williamsburg, where you have the different ultra-Orthodox groups, mm-hmm. A lot of the money that is circulating in that community or those communities is federal money.
Yeah.
Okay.
Even when they get caught misspending it, it's still not taken away. And I don't know what's provided them. Like, what exactly are their protections, and can we mimic those? Like, they obviously are protected. They have those protections. It can't simply be their religion. So, and I don't know enough about, what their arrangement is with our local government to figure that out. But they are obviously been protected.
They have protections because they have designed their protection. They have a system, and they have a series of interlocking systems. They have their own courts, the rabbinical courts, so they don't go to regular court. They mm-hmm. have their own schools. They also have control, generally, of regular schools where their children do not go. But
yes.
There's a great deal of money on local school boards, and they're at Lawrence Middle School and at
Lawrence High at this point. Yes, I do see that happening.
Right. So they have a system. In fact, Crown Heights was looted. First of all, what they did in Crown Heights, just to give you a quick example, we're getting close on time.
And before we go any further,
we're not
criticizing the Jewish community. We are simply trying to figure out what protections and systems look like.
It's about providing or designing a system that works for you and being dedicated to maintaining it. But we've reached the end of the program today. We'll continue this tomorrow, if you don't mind calling back, so you can finish your thought completely and you can get your point across. Thanks so much for joining me today and for offering your very insightful opinions for our consideration, which is going to be the reason we'll meet again tomorrow on Free Your Mind Friday. Stay tuned. Coming up next is, what's coming up next? Oh, yes, Expanding Mind with Eric Davis. You can reach me at leadstories@gmail.com. We'll meet again tomorrow for Free Your Mind Friday. Thank you so much. See you tomorrow. Yeah.